Unless you're a citizen of Rome, it's unlikely that you were there that day. Even if you are a citizen of Rome, you may not have been there, for not all the ancient city's people were present. Yet there was a crowd that day, the 25th of March, 1957. They stood in a drizzle of rain, surrounded by the 16th century buildings of Michelangelo, in the square at the top of Capitol Hill, waiting. Then there was a signal from the historic bells in the Capitoline Towers. At once, from every throat in the square, came a cheer. They cheered not because a celebrity from the world of sport or stage or politics had appeared on a balcony to wave. They cheered because the pealing bells told them that a treaty had been signed. Not to end a war, but to begin what they and millions of their fellow Europeans believe is the beginning of a new era.
United Nations Radio presents Trade Winds of Tomorrow, a factual report on the European Economic Community and how its implications for the world as a whole are reflected in the organs of the United Nations. The report will be delivered by the prominent news analyst, Raymond Swing.
This is Raymond Swing. That anyone, let alone a crowd of people, could stand in the rain to cheer the signing of an economic treaty must surely be the most remarkable demonstration of its importance that one can imagine. A demonstration of the hope that millions feel that with the birth of the European Economic Community, an old way of life has been consigned to history to be replaced by a new way, matching the imperatives of the present and the needs of the future. What is this treaty, and what is its significance to the world as a whole? Let's quickly review the facts.
Between now and 1970, if all goes according to plan, six nations of Europe, Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and Western Germany will gradually weld themselves into what, economically speaking, is one country.
Artificial barriers to trade between the six will disappear. Workers will be free to move from one country to another. Economic, financial, and social policies will be coordinated in matters such as equal pay for men and women.
The administration of the community will be in the hands of economic commissioners, responsible to a council of ministers and an assembly of members of parliament from the six countries. To settle disputes, there will be a court.
In its trade relations with other countries, the community of six will set up a common tariff barrier based on an average of the customs duties which each country now imposes on foreign imports.
Finally, the overseas territories of the six, mainly on the continent of Africa, are to be associated with the community for the purposes of trade and economic and social development.
These are not all the details. We haven't, for instance, mentioned the Companion Treaty, setting up what is known as Euratom, a plan to pool the nuclear skill and resources of the six to speed the development of atomic power and thus lighten the ever-growing demand for coal and oil. Nor have we mentioned another plan still being discussed, a plan to set up, beyond the Union of the Six, a free trade area involving 11 other nations from Turkey to Iceland. We haven't mentioned them because it's the reality of the new community itself, as defined in the Rome Treaty, that is holding the attention of economists and governments all over the world. In the total panorama of world trade, the members of the community represent a very large segment, and the plans to impose a common tariff on foreign imports and to forge special links with their overseas territories is not only a step of major political importance, but of wide economic significance. The event has evoked both enthusiasm and misgiving. To begin our examination of this question, we take you first to Geneva.
This is United Nations Radio broadcasting from Geneva. When the Second World War ended, everyone agreed that somehow the economic crisis, one might even say the economic anarchy, which had caused so much suffering during the depressed years of the 30s, must be avoided. One result of this determination was the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, the GATT, as it is known for short. 37 countries, including the members of the new community, are parties to this agreement, and the rules they've drawn up govern about 80% of world trade. Now, GATT has a small secretariat at the European headquarters of the United Nations in Geneva, and for this report, we've asked its executive secretary, Mr. Wyndham White, to explain the relationship between the Common Market Treaty and the GATT rules. Mr. White.
The customs union idea is not a new one. The most recent and successful attempt at a customs union is also in Europe, namely the Benelux. And a similar arrangement exists for coal and steel products in Europe in the so-called European Coal and Steel Community. But this particular development is by far the most important of its kind recorded in history, because it affects important countries and a very large segment of world trade. Now, how does the GATT come into the picture? The six countries which constitute the European Economic Community are parties to the General Agreement, and therefore their trade relations with the other 31 GATT countries are based on the GATT rules. Now, the GATT rules say that the reduction of trade barriers, tariffs, quotas, and so on, must be extended to all the member states without discrimination. But the GATT recognizes that it may work to the general advantage to encourage the total elimination of barriers to trade between two or more countries in the form of a customs union, without extending this to everybody else, provided that certain conditions which are designed to protect the interests of third countries are observed. And the basic principle is that the customs union shall aim at reducing barriers between its members and not at increasing barriers to trade with the rest of the world.
The GATT Secretariat has made a clause-by-clause study of the Common Market Treaty in the light of these rules, and it has been led to this view.
I think that the European Economic Community will have beneficial results in Europe, and that through discussion in the GATT, it will be possible to effect in a friendly way the consequential adjustments in trade relations with other countries. In the longer run, I would hope to see a prosperous European community contributing in a substantial way to the expansion of trade in the world as a whole.
In making the study, however, the GATT Secretariat found one particularly difficult question to answer. What is the likely impact of the plan to associate the overseas territories of the six countries with the common market?
It raises a number of very acute problems for countries which depend largely for their livelihood on the export to Europe of primary products, and products which are also the characteristic exports of these overseas territories of the European Economic Community. And these particular products, the trade in these products, closely affect countries in Africa, countries in Latin America, and countries in Asia. And these countries are gravely concerned that the privileged position which the overseas territories of the six community countries will have under the Rome Treaty will have the effect of driving them out of their traditional European markets. This question is being very carefully studied in the GATT, and even as I speak here today, there is a group of experts in this building examining these problems on a product-by-product basis.
Thank you. That was Mr. Wyndham White, Executive Secretary of GATT, and now back to UN Radio in New York.
To bring these problems and the reactions to them into more personal focus, we move again, this time to the capital of Thailand, Bangkok.
This is United Nations Radio, broadcasting from Bangkok. A short time ago, the Committee on Trade of the United Nations Economic Commission for Asia and the Far East held its first session here in Bangkok. One of the most fascinating discussions concerned the possible effects of the European Common Market and Free Trade Area on Asian trade and Asian economy. The Asian representatives expressed certain misgivings regarding the common market. They wanted to know, for example, whether the scheme would not restrict trade instead of developing it. and feared that it might hurt Asia.
To sharpen the focus, here is one of the Asian delegates to that committee meeting, Mr. Masahiro Nishibori of Japan, expressing his view, particularly regarding the links between the community and its overseas territories.
Let me explain in brief. Exports from non-member countries to the six member countries in Europe will be placed in a disadvantageous position vis-a-vis competitive products of such overseas territories, at least to the extent of higher tariffs imposed on imports from outside the country. These are the main fears and doubts we have, and all that we want is that the European common market will not have an exclusive character, but instead it will be developed along the line of expanding trade on a worldwide basis.
All members of the community except Luxembourg had delegates at the ECAFE meeting, and they gave an assurance that these Asian fears were groundless. Their spokesman in this report is the French delegate, Monsieur Jacques Massenet.
During their interventions at the trade committee of the ECAFE, the Dutch and French delegation pointed out that the European Common Market, whose official name is the European Economic Community, was not conceived as a restrictive economic or trading system, but that the intention of the six were that the development of the integration of their economies should further the expansion of the world economy as a whole. In our mind, and it is its essential aim, the European Common Market should bring a substantial increase in the productivity and the income level of the member countries. It should therefore contribute to the expansion of international trade by increasing our needs for products from abroad and easing our exports. A transitional period from 12 to 15 years has been set up to adjust the economies of the six and also the trade relation of third countries with the community. It is the intention of the six governments to use this period in a favorable sense to the interest of third countries.
Though this may well be the case in the long run, many countries outside the community foresee changes in the existing pattern of world trade which could directly influence their own development. For the countries of Asia, ECAFE is conducting studies of this possible influence. In other regions and from other points of view, other studies are underway.
This is United Nations Radio broadcasting from the headquarters of the Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome. Since trade in agricultural produce is one of the chief areas likely to be affected by the formation of the common market, FAO is naturally concerned. To state the position, here is the Director General of FAO, Mr. B.R. Sen.
What one country buys from another has a bearing on the ability of a third country to sell its own produce. The tariff charged by agreement between two countries affects the price at which a third can hope to compete. And from the producing country's point of view, the price it can get for its product will have an important bearing on whether its farmers will or should concentrate on a given crop. And what is FAO's role in this? FAO is not a participant in the European Common Market. It is not an arbiter among its member states. It is interested in facts, in the statistics of production and consumption, of export and import. FAO thus undertook some months ago to study agricultural data in the light of the then imminent Common Market Treaty. These commodity notes present FAO's view of the probable effects of the treaty on specific agricultural commodities. They deal with grain, rice, dairy products, with beef and cattle, fats and oils, citrus fruits and bananas, with cocoa and coffee, with tobacco, and with jute and hard fibers and cotton. FAO also has underway a more general study of the possible repercussions of the Common Market Treaty upon the general export markets for agricultural products of its member countries.
That was the Director General of FAO, Mr. B.R. Sen, speaking from Rome.
Back in New York, we return to the question of the links between the community and their overseas territories, and a very special aspect of the question from an international point of view. Some of these territories are non-self-governing or fall within the UN trusteeship system. Take just two African examples. There are the trust territories of the Cameroons under French administration and Rwanda-Urundi under Belgium administration. Now, the association of some of these territories with the community is certain to influence their development, and so it's a matter of considerable importance to the United Nations. To give us the picture, we introduce the UN Undersecretary for Trusteeship, Mr. Benjamin Cohen.
There are two important features in regard to non-self-governing and trust territories as a result of the Rome Treaty. One is that territories belonging to the members associated in the treaty will receive a considerable amount of financial assistance for the development of their economies. The other one is that many people ask themselves whether side by side with this positive assistance for the improvement of economic conditions, there may not arise the possibility of a deferment in the movement towards self-government or independence. Many people in the Fourth Committee of the General Assembly and in the Committee on Information from Non-Self-Governing Territories, as well as in the Trusteeship Council, have expressed a desire to examine more fully the implications of this common market arrangement. And the Secretariat is now preparing a report of the studies underway by many organs of the United Nations or other international groups which are interested in this matter. This report is to be submitted probably to the next meeting of the Trusteeship Council and to the forthcoming session of the General Assembly. Are the advantages of being drawn into this common market arrangement sufficient to justify any negative consequences which this more intimate association of overseas territories will have for their own future? That is the big pending question.
That was Mr. Benjamin Cohen, UN Undersecretary for Trusteeship. Returning now to purely economic considerations, we've already noted how developments are being closely followed in Asia. The same is true in Latin America. The UN Economic Commission for the region, headquartered at Santiago, Chile, is also conducting detailed studies of possible effects on such big regional exports as coffee from Brazil. Meanwhile, Latin American experts are pursuing another significant trend of thought. From Santiago comes this dispatch.
A working group of the UN Economic Commission for Latin America, chaired by Mr. Galo Plaza, former president of Ecuador, has come to the conclusion that the time is ripe to form a regional market in Latin America also. Looking over the existing trade situation in the region, they described it as divided into 20 watertight compartments, resulting in a waste of resources and a failure to match real income with a rapidly growing population. The formation of the European Community, they felt, emphasized the need for something similar in this area, and they drew up 12 principles as a guide towards it. Membership open to all countries in the region, special treatment for the less advanced nations, an eventual common tariff on imports from outside, and so on. More thought is to be given to this whole question, and the working group plans to meet again later this year at Mexico City.
To complete our report, we have to pay one more visit, a return visit to Geneva.
Once again, this is United Nations Radio in Geneva. Of the three regional economic commissions of the United Nations, the European body here in Geneva is perhaps the most intimately concerned with questions prompted by the common market. Its membership embraces not only the six members of the community, but all European countries, both Eastern and Western, who are members of the United Nations. We've asked Mr. Melvin Fagan, chief of the Commission's trade unit, to describe the Commission's place in the new emerging economic pattern of Europe.
The ECE has provided a forum additional to that, provided in other organizations for consideration of problems raised by the common market. Indeed, the Commission could provide a rather unique opportunity for certain European governments, which are not members of the GATT organization or of the OEC in Paris, to raise questions of particular concern to them and possibly to arrange, under the auspices of the ECE, mutually satisfactory solutions of the trading problems they face as a result of the establishment of the common market. These countries are, in addition to those of Eastern Europe and the USSR, Finland, Spain, and Yugoslavia, which are not members of GATT or the OEC, but are members of the Economic Commission for Europe. In this connection, it should be borne in mind that the ECE Committee on the Development of Trade has sponsored East-West trade consultations for a number of years. At these consultations, which take place annually, bilateral trade talks are arranged between interested countries in an effort to overcome various problems with which they are concerned in expanding trade between them. The ECE thus does offer a real possibility for interested governments to deal with certain problems raised by the creation of the common market, and it can, if the government so wish, assist them in reaching harmonious solutions.
Thank you, Mr. Fagan.
Thank you, Geneva. So, how will the trade winds of tomorrow blow? An absolutely accurate forecast is virtually impossible at this stage. The ideal climate is clearly one in which the whole world is a common market. For, as the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Dag Hammarskjöld, has said of the European community and of possibly similar agreements in other regions,
movements of this kind cannot be regarded as a substitute for efforts to achieve greater global integration through a general expansion of multilateral trade.
Though these efforts will continue, their fruits aren't likely to ripen for many years yet. Meanwhile, must a conflict arise between the larger global efforts and the understandable desire of different regions to combine for immediate regional benefits? Again, one cannot say at this stage. The answer will emerge after patient and technically detailed work in many committees. There won't be any sudden and exciting headlines. Yet the forces of change are gathering momentum, and it is for the United Nations both a challenge and a responsibility to help guide these forces away from possible conflict and into broad fields of universal good. Not long ago, the Secretary General spoke to a meeting of the European Economic Commission. In that speech, he said,
"As I see it, ECE should look towards playing a role not only in analyzing the new problems raised by the common market, but also in ensuring that this development in part of Europe is carried forward within a broader process directed towards greater economic integration in Europe as a whole and between Europe and the rest of the world."
You have just heard Trade Winds of Tomorrow, a report on the European Economic Community and world reaction as reflected in the United Nations. Delivered by Raymond Swing, this report was prepared by the International Staff of United Nations Radio in New York.